So to unpack this further, joining us from Singapore is Tariq Horchani, Head of Dealing, Prime Brokerage at Maybank Securities. Tariq, let's talk a little bit more about the US Federal Reserve decision. Since March 2022, they have indeed pursued a more aggressive campaign to staff basically demand. Do you think the rate hike is practically done for this year, or are you part of that consensus that might see a one-time rate hike towards the end of this year?
Good morning. I think you have made good points. So we need to look carefully at the data to be able to answer this question. Now, the Fed expects growth to be at 2.1% year on year in 2023 versus 1% that they were expecting in June. And it also expects the unemployment rate to end the year at 3.8%, which is lower than their projection in June that was at 4.1%. Also, in inflation, slightly higher than what they were predicting. The only positive things that I see here is the core PCE inflation projection now is a bit lower by 20 basis points at 3.7%. There are definitely a big change in wording from the Fed, in pattern combo from like strong economy growth versus moderate that we saw in June, and tight labor market conditions. And they still see the labor market conditions as strong versus the word robust that they used in the previous FOMC statement. So the consequence of that is the dot plot, which now signals another hike of 25 basis points before the end of the year. And also they have done projections for next year to be a slower pace of cut rates in 2024 and 2025, which is a big change from June, where we were expecting 100 basis point cut. Now it's only 50 to 75 basis point cut in 2024. So I expect the Fed actually to raise rates one more time by the end of the year. I don't agree with some of the economists who are saying that the Fed will cut 100 basis points next year. I think with the growth at more than 2% and inflation at this level, it's still too high to see massive rate cuts from the Fed next year. So I expect probably cuts to start in the middle of next year and maybe much less than what the market is expecting. With inflation that will remain above the 2% target.
Tariq, the FOMC said in a statement this morning that it included projections that inflation rate remains elevated, basically incorporating strong economic growth and looking at job growth that could be remain strong. So what does it mean if growth is stronger than predicted, and how do you think this factors in into that decision of the rate possibly hiking one more time this year?
It's a very good question, and it's the most difficult for the Fed to answer. The growth projections now have been raised to 2.1% versus 1.5%, and it was and 1.5% next year and to from 1.1%. So it's the most difficult situation because the Powell thinks that at a growth rate above 1.8%. is not going to be disinflationary. So we need to have growth below 1.8% to be able to see the pace of inflation to slow down. And this will help the Fed to justify that raising interest rates is taking an effect on the economy. But it's not the case. Economy is very resilient. So that's also why they're looking at probably raising rates one more time. And could be maybe another time after that. We will see if it's just the effect on rates is still taking a very slow pace to have an effect on growth. So, I mean, you have a good point. It will be a difficult decision for the Fed. We will need to see growth to go lower to be able to see a change of stance from the Fed and start to talk about rate cuts.
Let's look at the trend of the inflation rate right now, because the federal fund rate falling to 5.1% projected at the end of next year, 3.9% by the end of 2025. And central bank's main measure of inflation is projected to drop to 3.3% by the end of this year, to 2.5% next year, and 2.2% by 2025. All this is, of course, a trend. So the Fed expects to get its inflation rate back to its 2% target by 2026. Let's be realistic here. Do you think that can be achieved? And what can we read from the inflation forecast following the hold on this particular interest rate this morning?
I mean, you see the Fed, now members are all waiting their inflation forecast on the upside, taking a new view that the risk of growth and unemployment rates to be broadly balanced. The direct consequence, like we talked about a bit earlier, is a dot plot shows that the rate cut won't be as strong as what it was predicted in June 2023. Will inflation go to 2%? I don't think so. With wages that have increased, companies where employees were still looking to get their wages higher, sticky inflation, oil price at above $90, I don't think we will reach that level of 2%. I think we can reach closer to 2%, maybe 2.5, but we have to put things in our head that we are in a new paradigm for inflation. We're never going to go back to zero inflation rates. There's the sticky inflation, the wage growth is, unless we see a recession, which means a lot of layoffs and then a reset of the economy with lower salaries. I don't believe the market is, labor market is still tight. So we are very far from this point. So I don't believe that we'll reach this 2% target. That's why I think that the rates will remain elevated for a longer period of time.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the US labor market. Driving here, I was listening to a podcast about a possible strike by the auto workers industry. There's a continued strike on the Writers Guild Association or labor union. And of course, we're looking at the labor market being cooling off right now, signaling fresh headwinds, including resumption of student loan debts, repayments, government shutdown possibility. Because of all this, what can we read from this, particularly from the domestic market within the US, and how do you think this will play into this whole idea of the Fed holding rates this morning?
I mean, the mention of the auto strike is an important element to consider. The sticky inflation that represents wage growth is slowing down, which is also why the economy is very resilient from 6.6% year on year in March 2022. To 4.3% today. But some industries like the auto want to benefit from a record profit that we have seen post-COVID with a stronger demand, higher prices, and they're asking for a pay rise of 30% over 4 years. The biggest issues now up for the negotiations involve the level of pay hikes and benefits for workers. The three automakers have proposed 20% raises over the next 4.5 years. But it's quite far away from what the unions is asking for. So with the sticky inflation, the main worries now for the government is that this strike spreads to other industries and more want to benefit from the stronger demand that we have seen in the US the past year. Regarding the student loan repayment, this will have a big effect on the impact on the economy. I call it the shark loans of the US with accrued interest restarting could for me trigger the next financial crisis and have a huge impact on the economy. Student loans borrowers for info represent around $1.63 trillion in federal student loan debt. Consequence is that young Americans were the driver of this resilient economy, as shown with stronger consumer spending, and the start of the loan repayment in October will reduce the annualized GDP growth in the fourth quarter to about 0.2%, which is quite significant. So I guess it will help the Fed to push down GDP toward the 1.8%, 2% that they want, but probably for the wrong reasons. And the full and likely government shutdown at the end of the month is highly likely now. It's going to be difficult to pass a new budget after the, what they have tried to do in June. Also, this will probably push U.S. growth down by 0.2% by the end of the year if we have this shutdown. But I don't think it's going to be a major impact on the stock market, though. So, I mean, luckily. You mentioned rightfully there's still a lot of uncertainty around this growth path and consumer spending between the government strikes, the government shutdown, auto strikes, loan repayments, and so on.
Tariq Rochani, head of dealing prime brokerage at Maybank Securities Singapore, joins us. Tariq, let's focus on Asia right now. What about the impact on Asian markets and Asian central banks? We saw Bank Negara here in Malaysia held the interest rate for two times, if I'm not mistaken. What would be some of the impact when we look at some of the Asian markets and Southeast Asian markets? Do you feel that they're going to react to a non-reaction to this holding of this interest rate?
I don't think so. I think a lot of economies in Southeast Asia, I mean, partly, but a lot of it is driven also by the Chinese economy, which is in a different path from the US. They are more on the Kirk cycle, subsidies, trying to revive this growth that has been slowing down for a while now. So I don't think it will be a major impact. I don't think that one more hike will affect too much some of the Asian economies, but definitely the stock market will be impacted. I mean, we have seen Nasdaq down 1%, 1.53% yesterday. So the stock market this morning has been lower. There will be some impact, but we're really in the middle between US and what's happening in China and the slowing pace of growth in the Chinese economy. Also a big impact on the real estate sector in China that is also affecting what we could see potentially in Southeast Asia. So yes and no, that will be my answer. It's probably not the best answer, but it's really, we are in the middle of this fight between the Chinese economy slowing down and the US economy that is quite robust.
Okay, let's instead pivot that question. Let's look at Treasury yields, for instance, because it hit a 16-year high ahead of the Fed meeting. Because of this, it does provide some opportunities for the fixed income business to actually attract more investors locally and abroad. Do you feel that there would be a greater interest in Treasury yields, Treasury products right now amongst Asian markets to get into the U.S. Treasury?
Definitely. We are in the 2 year, the level that we have not seen since 2006. For the 10 year, we are at level seen in 2007. The curve is quite steep. I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. There's probably more room to go for the 10 year yield and move higher than where we are now at 4.4%. Probably getting closer to the 5% level. So in terms of risk as an investor, definitely there's a strong interest to go into treasuries. There is some interest to go into investment grade, but going into high yield, the price that you have to pay for high yield compared to what you can get in treasuries is not amazing. So with this type of rates in treasury, the demand will continue to be strong and should be stronger. And even deposit rates at some point will have to move higher. In Southeast Asia, I mean, Singapore in particular is moving along with the US rates. So definitely investors will be more either cash driven or treasury driven or go for high quality names under the corporate bond space.
And of course, when you draw the, I guess, comparison between China and the US and how the Asian markets are practically slapped in between. There's a lot of corporates within China, for instance, that might look for going for listing. There are corporates around the world that is looking for listings as well, signaling perhaps, you know, the IPO age is coming back after a very poor pandemic kind of moment. Having said that, the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange is in a fight for closest listings contest in 5 years. We saw Birkenstock IPO that's going to be made very soon. Instacart, for instance, has surged 12%. Any thoughts on this, particularly when it comes to the IPO listing in the US, for instance?
I think it's going to continue. I mean, we mentioned that the economy is robust. Institutional investors have a lot of cash to deploy. I mean, we saw Instacart was 23 times oversubscribed. Arm also was very oversubscribed. Personally, I think that there will be more emphasis on the technology sector and especially around the AI ecosystem. There are a lot of companies like Google Venture, Microsoft, HP invested heavily into this microprocessing companies in the US, which are private at the moment. So from Series B to Series E, but also AI-driven companies, iRobots, and so on. All these companies will do IPO in the next 1, 2, 3 years, and they will be massive. We are talking about a few billion dollars for each one of them in terms of market cap. The demand will be very strong. The demand from institutional investors into the space that for me is going to change the world will remain very strong as well. So I expect actually the NASDAQ to benefit a lot from it. There will be probably more also repercussions on other types of industries, but I am a strong believer that AI will drive this IPO world and ecosystem for the next 2 to 3 years.
Sorry, so what do you mean by AI massive driving this ecosystem? Do you mean like corporates leveraging on AI technology, or the stock markets are trying to push through AI improvements on getting or attracting corporates to list on their particular boards? Which one is it?
Yeah. A bit of both. There will be a strong demand for AI products. So companies that already exist that will want to integrate AI components into their products. So there will be new companies offering this kind of new products. The microprocessors as well are developing. An example I can give you is photonic microprocessors that allow more data to go through these microprocessors. And this is especially driven for AI that requires a lot of data analytics. Machine learning also will continue to develop. And I see new services that are going to get provided to banks, to retail companies that are going to drive the market in the next 2 to 3 years, exactly. So it's a bit of both. New product and already existing companies that will integrate more AI into their processes.
Do you feel that it's going to be attracting a lot of private funds into this space as well, private equity, venture capital, to actually boost the kind of development onto these corporates before they go for listing? Or do you think that that whole idea of investment winter is upon us right now?
Definitely. I mean, I have connections in Silicon Valley. Just Google Venture or the private equity arm of Microsoft is investing heavily in this kind of companies at valuation at $600 million to $1 billion for private companies in this space. And I'm talking in 2023. So it just gives you an idea of what kind of valuation we can get when they start to go IPO in the next 2 to 3 years.
Still on equities, I want to push back to Asia because major Asian equity markets rallied last week but remained flattish over the past 3 days following the Fed, or waiting for the Fed decision. Of course, all the markets are now opening up today. Emerging currencies were mixed after market beating. Economic data from China, for instance, added the expectations that global central banks were close to being done with their tightening cycle. Do you feel that, say, for instance, in Singapore, the market where you're literally at right now, is going to be a little bit more robust? Because Singapore itself, I saw the stock kind of closed flattish yesterday. Do you think that might, because of the decision that has been achieved right now by the US and with China's industrial production and retail sales now beating estimates, there's going to be a lot more invigoration in terms of investors trying to see what they can get, say, for instance, in the Singapore market or some other Southeast Asian market? Where do you feel the appetite when it comes to investors in Southeast Asia when it comes to equities?
Demand for Southeast Asia markets has been growing this year. The performance probably is not as strong as what we have seen in the US. The market here is still driven a lot by a few factors, by what we see in China, definitely, and the US. The hedge funds investing in Southeast Asia have not had the best performance, but they are much better than what they had last year, and actually most of them are making money. Japan has been very strong in Asia, at least this year, in terms of equity market, also driven by the tech space. Anything related to AI in Taiwan, Japan has been overperforming. For Southeast Asia, you have pockets of good performers. It's still quite mild compared to what we have seen early this year in the US. But definitely, there will be some kind of shift anyway. There's been some kind of shifts from North Asia to Southeast Asia that we have noticed since the start of the year. This will continue, especially with the consumer spending and the robust economy that we still have in the US. This will have a positive impact on Southeast Asia overall. So I'm quite positive.
Very quick one.
For Southeast Asia.
Very quick one, Tariq. The semiconductor war, so to speak. What's your view on this? Do you think that this is going to continue on, or do you think that things are already stabilizing between the US and China when it comes to the semiconductor war?
It will continue. It's just the start. This, like I mentioned, and with AI and what's going to happen in terms of IPO in the next 2-3 years, is heavily driven by also the microprocessor development. And China wants to be a part of it. They're trying to develop it by themselves. It's difficult. The Taiwan-China relationship also will have a major impact on that, and the geopolitical risk around this, for me, is only going to increase. So this is just the start.
All right. Thank you very much, Tariq. That was Tariq Horchani, head of dealing prime brokerage at Maybank Securities Singapore. Continue to stay with us on Astro Awani, but for now, I'm calling it a day. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.